Geek Speak on KUSP is supported by Mira Software Services, 1,500 software geeks in Western Russia who provide iOS and Android for mobile, machine-to-machine, and embedded software engineering. Details at mera.biz or 650-479-5350.
It is Saturday, February 15th, 2014. We are broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is KUSP, Public Radio 88.9 and KUSP.org. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. Please keep in mind that the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP or any of the geeks' affiliated organizations. I'm Bonnie Jean Primshin. With me in the host chair today in the studio. With me in the host chair.
Yes, move over. Scoot over, Bonnie.
Excuse me. Oh, that would have been a fun post-Valentine show. All right. Lyle Troxell is with us, a maker, photographer, thespian, and software engineer.
Yo.
Hello. We also have Miles Elam, a software engineer and political junkie.
Good morning.
And Ben Jaffe, a web development instructor, musician, and world traveler.
Oi.
Hello. So on this day...
Yes, in this day in history, the ENIAC machine was officially released. That is 1946. The Electronic Numerical Integrator and Computer was the first electronic general-purpose computer. It was Turing-complete, digital, and capable of being reprogrammed to solve a full range of computer problems. It was actually first kind of came online and announced to the public on February 14th, 1946, and officially dedicated the next day as being online. So... years and years ago.
What does it mean to be Turing complete?
Oh, wait, that could be a long discussion, Miles.
That is.
And he knows the answer to that. It
passes
question.
Tests.
What it means is that if you have a Turing complete computer, you mathematically can do, you can achieve any problem with a computer.
You can solve all formal logical problems.
All formal logical problems. Good. Good answer. Thanks for asking me. And making me look like an idiot. Anyway, that's February 15th, 1946.
And today is also Half Price Candy Day.
Oh, yeah. Today is Half Price Candy Day.
Or in the case of Lyle bringing in his candy.
Free candy day.
My mouth feels all funny because I ate all the seized candy right before I came in here.
And I enjoyed watching all of you eat it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we are like...
being a zero-carb guy, I don't eat chocolate, but it's fun to watch you all eat it.
We enjoyed ourselves.
Like, here, have some chocolate. Don't you all feel guilty?
But I just laughed at you and
danced.
I can't
eat it.
I don't eat that. All right, we have a lot of stories to get through today. Let's see how many we can get through in the next few minutes.
One, two, three, go.
Let's tell them what's going on with a Jade Rabbit.
Jade Rabbit, or U2 as they call it in China. That's China's first lunar rover. And it had stopped functioning a while back because, well, basically it landed on the moon. And then when it was going into the lunar night, it went to bed, in a way, in an abnormal state. And so here on Earth, we were kind of freaking out because we're like, well, that's bad news, because if it's going to bed in abnormal state, it probably hasn't closed up all the way, which means it's going to freeze to death, basically.
Uh-oh, yeah.
And it won't be able to wake back up once it sees the sun again.
Mm-hmm.
But and everyone was saying, all right, well, that's it, you know. But apparently reports of its demise have been premature. It woke back up, and we're not really sure what's going on with it, if it's okay or if it's kind of wonky or something. But anyway, so we'll see as the story progresses. That was on the 12th. That was 3 days ago, if you're listening here on Saturday, February 15th. And I'm just hoping that it's still alive and can do all the things that it was sent to the moon to do.
What's its name?
Jade Rabbit in English, or U2 in Mandarin.
That's awesome, Jade Rabbit. Why don't we have spaceship names like that?
I don't know.
Or lander names like that. That's awesome.
The Voyager.
Yeah.
Yeah, we only have Spirit and Opportunity. Yeah, those are depressing. Come on.
Come
Come on.
I don't know. Jade rabbits are cute.
Jade rabbit feels more anthropomorphizable.
Yeah.
Wow, that was a mouthful.
Wait, Jade rabbit. How is that anthropomorphizing when you're saying that it's a rabbit?
Well, we anthropomorphize rabbits more.
Connects to my love of animals.
Fewer steps.
I'm vegetarian.
It's concrete. As you know, like a jade rabbit, that's like a thing. As
it's not concrete. It's jade.
It's kind of like... Okay. Moving on, Miles.
Remember that whole, we have a lot of news stories to go through?
Fail. Anyway, that's what I got to say about that. It's going to be up on the Geekspeak site.
It is.
That's true. In fact,
already.
Yes, even as we speak, things are being added to geekspeak.org. So as you listen along, you can watch along on our website. Miles, what's going on with the music industry?
There has been a paper written saying that the music industry will... as it stands right now, music streaming companies will never make a profit given the fees that the music industry places upon them.
Wouldn't it serve the music industry to have those things be profitable and figure out some sort of profit sharing system?
You'd think so.
But they're doing something different.
They're doing something different. So if you get music from a radio station, the radio stations often get paid by some companies from their commercial to play some songs. Mm-hmm. And satellite companies have a pretty reasonable deal. But if you're streaming over the internet, you get 60 to 70% of your profits immediately sucked up by
having
music licensing.
Music licensing. So this is kind of a big debate between the Creative Commons kind of open, keep it all open webby types and the, wow, I made something and I'd like to get paid for it types. And then beyond that, there's sort of like the in-betweener music industry saying, we're just going to take the money. And artists may or may not actually
see it. It's a curious thing of saying, if someone is listening to the music from a radio station, that it is a fundamentally different license and fundamentally different terms that we should negotiate than if someone listens over Pandora, mm-hmm. that or Spotify or any of those. It's a question of control, really, I guess, is what it comes down to.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a power struggle. Okay, nothing new there. But it's nice to know. So I guess if you want to stick it to the music industry, you will, listen to streaming services anyway?
No, because you're still giving money directly to the music industry. In fact, a greater percentage of your money, if you pay for a subscription to Spotify or Pandora, is probably going to be.
So if you don't like Spotify or Pandora, then you should use them? I don't know.
Use them to death.
No, not quite.
No. All right. Well, we'll figure that out.
It's really hard to stick it to the music industry and still listen to music.
Yeah.
I think that's what it comes down to.
It's tough.
Well, if you want to listen to the music that the music industry represents as opposed to your local bands and who you should be going to see on a regular basis.
Yeah, go see live music.
Open mics are great.
It goes more directly to the artist. All right, good. Recommendations from the geeks.
Who all here has actually gone to see like a local performance band recently, the last 3 months?
I performed at an open mic, actually the last 3 Mondays, and the coming Monday.
And Lyle crawls into a hole.
You don't have any kids.
Ha! Take that.
That's the blanket excuse
awesome,
for
man.
Everything.
Was it good? Was that you in front of the keyboard? I saw them.
On Facebook, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was in my...
I'll put that picture up on GeekSpeak right now since we mentioned it.
Ben plays music, you guys.
Yeah.
Hey, who is the most valuable company in the world?
ExxonMobil. Apple, actually.
Apple's more better than ExxonMobil?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, we actually covered this, I don't know, what, 12 months ago, something like that.
Okay, earlier.
And that just blew me away because, you know, we talk a lot about how much money is in the oil industry. Apple has more money, is valued at more than ExxonMobil, the world's largest oil industry, or the world's largest oil company, which is terrifying and... I don't even know how to feel about it. I mean, I'd rather have someone who's not an oil company be the biggest. Well, now ExxonMobil is not the second biggest anymore because Google has surpassed them.
Taking it.
Yeah, actually, to be a pedant, because that's what we do sometimes as geeks, Apple was temporarily bigger than ExxonMobil. ExxonMobil went above them again. So right now ExxonMobil is the top.
Nope.
As per this article that you're linking to. Yeah.
No, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, what happens with
second
these...
Second most valuable.
Yeah.
Wait a second. I thought Apple was ahead of Google now, though.
Oh,
no,
nice.
I think that they toggled back.
I imagine it's a pretty active race, and we can report next week, and
Google,
we might have different answers.
It says in the article, Google is now $75 billion behind Apple in terms of market capitalization.
Lyle crawls deeper into the hole.
I'm glad you're here, though, Lyle.
But the website's being updated automatically.
So good. Well, you know, because of the sort of friendly debate we have here every week on Geek Speak, I can imagine that we have already blown out the stereotype that geeks are loners. But Miles, you've got some more evidence about that.
Yes. In fact, found that. Sorry, I'm a little slow here.
Well, basically, like on the heels of Valentine's Day, it's a good thing to be looking at. I happen to be wearing a shirt right now that says, "I love my geek. I have a geek, and I love him."
Right. As it turns out, 62.1% of people with IT jobs are married, 56.5% of scientists, and 65.5% of engineers, which compares well to legal professions, medical jobs, and finance. So geeks, yeah, you still have a pretty good social life.
Bound chicka bow, you're getting out.
I'm the only one here without a geek t-shirt on.
That is the correct
thing. And there's a silence as everyone looks around.
We're all checking our T's.
I'm just wearing a monochromatic gray t-shirt, and everyone else is...
We are all in neutral colors, though. Let's point that out.
Yeah.
Most black and gray.
Well, I have a Geek Speak t-shirt.
Yeah, really, yeah, technically,
an actual Geek Speak shirt.
Bonnie is the only one with a geeky t-shirt. The rest of us are just wearing our corporate sponsors.
Geek Speak is not my corporate sponsor. I have a negative income flow.
Your corporate sponsor isn't working properly.
No.
If we were in this for the money, we'd be failing.
It is such a cool t-shirt, though. Too bad you can't get any.
So there's
yeah, thank you, Al Luckow, for that wonderful logo.
Yeah. There are a couple people out there, some of whom may be listening, who have Geek Speak shirts. You are a very select few.
Congratulations.
You're not one of them.
So we're making room in the world for all types of people, including social geeks. And now Facebook is making room for all kinds of, people on the gender spectrum. What do you know about that, Ben?
Yeah. Basically, now if you're on Facebook, you don't have to be male or female. You can be one of 50 additional options that they've added, including transgendered and cisgendered and gender fluid and neither. You could just put neither. Mm-hmm. And then you can also choose your pronouns. So you can be his or he or she or her, or you could just be they or there. And I think this is fantastic.
It is fantastic.
It's really, really wonderful. And there are a lot of social sites out there. Actually, OkCupid is a dating site, and they don't have this. And they're a dating site which is, it's in a lot of ways, more open for people who don't fit right on one side or the other of the gender binary. But they don't have this option. And it's just kind of strange to see that. I'm really happy that Facebook has taken done the move.
Well, perhaps if people engage with that aspect of Facebook more and more, other sites will take note.
Absolutely.
And make accommodations accordingly.
Yeah, when really big sites do things, smaller sites follow along.
Okay, so thank you, Facebook. I said that sentence.
Gabriella, who did the implementation of that, is a good friend of mine.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. She went to Facebook a little while ago and started programming and developing, and known her since high school. Used to game D&D with her and stuff.
Huh.
And she's awesome for implementing that.
Right on. Yeah. Hey, Miles.
Yes.
You know, Mercury's in retrograde right now.
Yes.
This is a time we should not be making big decisions or we should expect our travel plans to go awry. And many people report that as a factor in why their lives are getting fuggled right now. However...
Yes, there was a National Science Foundation survey, or a survey funded by it, that nearly half of Americans think astrology is either very or sort of scientific, and especially so among young people, which was very depressing.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was
this. And I'm sorry for upsetting anyone who might be who is listening, but astrology is kind of nonsense.
It's
but
an
Mercury,
interesting
retrograde.
You know, I just Googled that. Is Mercury in retrograde? You're right.
It
How
is.
Do you know that? I guess you live in Santa Cruz. I don't.
I saw it on Facebook earlier.
Oh.
There is a bright side to this, though.
Yeah.
The bright side is that the report was flawed.
Oh, okay.
As it turns out, when asking people what do they think astrology is, many of them actually started describing astronomy.
Oh.
So it wasn't that they believed that...
They just don't know their L's from their
N's. That the constellations had to do with our fate. It was that they had a misunderstanding about the terminology.
Okay.
And
so they didn't accurately test for that common misunderstanding.
Wait, is this a good thing or a bad thing?
That's a good thing, in my opinion, because I believe that the concept is always more important than the terminology.
It's easier to tell someone that the word they had in mind was astronomy, not astrology, than your belief system is flawed.
So they don't know what the word astronomy or astrology is. That's just the definition
word.
Who cares? But they know that what they care and believe in is that we study the universe to
that
figure things out.
That the fact that
is that right?
The location of the stars and positions and rotations within the solar system, and that is a science.
Yeah.
As opposed to our personalities dependent upon their arbitrary positions.
I would be interested in figures on how many people not only switch the two but actually conflate the two and think like, oh, astronomy / astrology, whatever the heck that astros or something thing
that I think has a strong factor on
whether that is the study of the planets, the study of all of the heavenly bodies and stuff, and the constellations and our astrological signs. Like, I wonder if people group those together into one thing.
Well, let's take up the whole subject of what people know versus what they don't more a little bit more after the break. This is Geek Speak here on 88.9 KUSP. I feel like a geek bit. You got one for me, Ben?
I've got a really funny geek bit. Actually, I'm just going to play it for you guys as I talk about it. Basically, this camera from the skydiver fell out of the airplane with the skydiver, just detached from his head, and then the camera kind of went flying all on its own.
Oh.
Started spinning so fast that the image actually went all wonky and then stabilized again.
Uh-huh.
Then it landed in the mud, kind of tumbled. And it landed in a pig pen. And then a pig comes over and starts trying
it's
to eat
it. It's got
to
be fake. That sounds too amazing.
It's super charming, though.
It's so funny to
Look
watch.
Look at that little
snozzle. And you can see, the inside of its mouth as it tries to eat it.
That is now up on geekspeak.org.
You guys should check that out.
It is so funny. But this video went viral.
It might be edited, maybe.
No, that this video went viral, and it has a lot of views. Right now it has 7.3 million views. And it actually is real. Like, someone from CNET actually investigated this and found that, yes, this actually did happen, and this is how it, and da-da-da-da-da.
But might it have been sort of edited for comic timing or something? Because it's just so perfect.
No, it just lands, and then the pig walks up to it.
Oh, my gosh.
So, I mean, there's a possibility. Of course, there's always a possibility it could be edited.
Yeah,
but
Phil Platt covered the story.
Phil Plate.
So it's got to be real because it's amazing.
He basically said, yeah, all of these things, and it really seems like a hoax. But also it was apparently true. And then he goes into it, and it's just so funny to watch.
Sometimes
it's only
awesome
a minute.
Things really are real. That makes me happy.
Do seriously go to geekspeak.org and watch this. This is so funny.
Hey, there was another awesome thing that happened. It was sort of a flash in the pan. Flappy Birds.
Yeah, okay. What is that?
I didn't even get a chance to check in with Flappy Birds and find out what all that was about.
Flappy Birds was a iOS app, specifically kind of for the iPhone, but in any iOS.
No, there was an Android version as well in Play Store.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, really? Was that pulled too? Okay, so anyway, it became extremely popular. Lots of people playing it. I have not played it.
Do we know what's basic game is? How is it different from Angry Birds?
So you have to keep a flapping. You have to flap the. It's kind of. Do you remember?
Just keep it in flight.
You tap the screen to have the bird
like
flap,
joust.
And by flapping, it goes up. And
okay.
if you don't tap, then you start to fall due to gravity.
Okay, yeah.
So you have to get through obstacles
fly.
To get
it's
through.
It's a little bit like Joust. Okay.
Much like Joust.
Okay, all right.
I haven't played either of these, so
I'm just going to agree.
It wasn't. It wasn't an extremely polished game. We see some amazingly polished games. You know, lots of developers, giant releases. Angry Birds is an example of that. There's actually a lot of people working on that game, and it's really well done.
Okay.
But Flappy Birds, one of the things that was compelling about it was there was 8-bit graphics, so kind of silly animation, simple animation.
Like
there was a
Super
banner.
Mario Brothers kind of animation.
Yeah, an ad banner at the top, thank you. And it was very difficult to play. And the leaderboard for it was shared. So as you got a vote, I got a rating of 6 on this, you could get up on the leaderboard and share that.
Okay.
So it became extremely popular, and so popular that the person that developed the game, one developer, was making about $50,000 in ad revenue a day.
Oh, that's pretty great.
Which is pretty amazing. And then all of a sudden,
that's kind of like a success story, right? That's what you want.
You would
think. I want to make an app, and then it'll feed me.
Then he made an announcement about pulling it, And Miles, why did this developer pull it? What's going
people on? People were, well, one, he was constantly getting harassed. Like, the press and individual users were constantly saying, you know, like, damn you, this game is so addictive. Like, he'd fix a bug and it changed the gameplay slightly. Like, why did you mess with something perfect?
Okay, all right.
And he was, in his mind, the fact that this game that he had made as a diversion, that you need to kill 5 minutes here, let's do that, and you'll be done with it, that people were spending so much time with it, mm-hmm. that it had an addictive quality, and he considered that an antisocial thing for him to do, to have this game out there for people to have, wow. for people to waste time with.
It's like he's walking the Eightfold Path or something. Like trying to do good in the world.
Yeah, Doug Nguyen, 29, pulled it. He's the one who wrote it and pulled it. Nguyen?
No.
Nguyen? How do you spell it?
Nguyen.
Yeah, that's Nguyen.
Nguyen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, so you think he did it because he didn't like the idea of
why he specifically said, I'm pulling this. I don't like the fact that this has become addictive for people.
Wow.
Now, also what happens, of course, the other thing that happens, of course, in this situation is it became so popular, and he became so popular because of it. His Twitter account was being slammed. He was getting all that dirtiness of the internet addressed at him.
Mm.
Basically, popular on the internet means that you get hate and nastiness and good stuff, but it's hard.
And so it's funny how the rest of us think of it, because when we think of, $50,000 a day or something very high like that, it becomes
exciting.
Hey, I'm going to hire some people to handle my Twitter account for me so I don't have to see it.
Oh, like, is that how you think about it? Mm-hmm. I think I would be a little more kind of not smooth in that transition between, raking in the piles and then attending so much to the interactions from the internet that I would not have time to hire a person.
Yeah, that is something that is interesting is that at no time from looking at the Twitter feed did he ever become bitter or lash out at people. He was always diplomatic, even when people were being very undiplomatic.
And I like this guy.
Yeah, I believe he did. No matter what comes of this, I believe he was coming from a very honorable place.
An honorable place and some strong personal values, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. He says, it was designed to be played in a few minutes when you're relaxed. But it's happened, and this is a quote, happened to become an addictive product. I think it has become a problem. To solve that problem, it's best to take down Flappy Bird. It's gone forever. Now, if you have it on your phone, it doesn't get removed from your phone.
Mm-hmm.
So the people that have it, and you can still
play
it.
And in fact, people have been selling those phones on eBay for a large sum of money.
They're going to cash in some of that Nguyen money.
But there's also there's also another aspect to this, which is that Flappy Birds has not gone away. What's happened is a huge number of other people have made variations of Flappy Birds and remixed it. And like, for example, there is now a massive multiplayer online version of Flappy Bird where you're playing and then there are shadowed versions of everyone else playing using WebSockets.
So just like your data is never forgotten on the internet in the internet age, your ideas are not forgotten either.
Right. In fact, I even saw a video of someone playing an Oculus Rift version of it, which is a VR goggle, a first person point of view of Flappy Birds.
Wow. You know, the internet really is hungry and mean and just sort of base. you're making money?
Like nature.
I want to make money. Yeah, like nature. Yeah, it's very...
Yeah, definitely.
It's very dog-eat-dog out there. Well, congratulations to Daniel Nguyen for taking care of his life in the way that he sees fit.
I do like the respect of deciding to do something like that.
Yeah. Right on. So that's something that he programmed.
He did. He's a programmer. You know, there's a lot of really cool programmers out there.
Yeah.
Bonnie, I've been on this soapbox for a while on GeekSpeak. I think it's one of my roles to try to push technology forward in GeekSpeak. And I've been on this kick that everyone should learn to program. And I even make these similes that, you know, at one point not all the population could read and write, and now we understand that reading and writing is important, and the population has that ability now because we've invested in it, right?
Right.
Have you been on internet forums lately? I'm not sure that everyone is with it.
But anyway, I sort of recognize that this is a tenet of the show.
Yes.
That everyone should learn to code.
Right. So I take this idea that, you know, programming now is like being able to read and write 200 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. Not everybody could do it, but the elite can for some reason or at some level. Maybe the people that, and our world is managed by computer programs, and therefore participating in that level makes sense. And so I kind of had this push. But at the same time, this last week you sent a note saying, hey, my friend's learning to program. We should have her on the show and talk about the journey of programming.
Right. It sounded like, gee, why don't we? Like, if we want to encourage people to program, why not hear directly from people who are going on that journey?
Yeah.
And that can be an inspiration to other people who are considering how to program.
So like, I really flippantly responded back with this process of thought that was, wait, Bonnie doesn't know how to program. She's already on the show regularly. We could hear an update every week. All she has to do is start learning to program. And you were like, no.
I don't want to learn
how to
program.
So am I... So Bonnie, putting you on the spot a bit, why don't you want... Do you believe that I'm lying to you that it's important? Am I just wrong?
No.
Or is it just not important enough?
I really have been... I don't know. Folks remember a couple weeks back at the beginning of the year, we were talking about sort of hopes for the year or recommendations for people going forward.
Yeah.
And you said, everyone should learn to code. And I said, if you aren't a geek, befriend a geek.
And that was your translation of what I said?
No, that was my version of advice to the people out there, that if you are not a geek, befriend a geek, and then you won't have to be a geek.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
And you're not the first person host on Geek Speak by a wide margin to not know how to program. We've had many over the years.
Really?
Yeah.
So I'm not the only one. Lyle.
It just happens to be the other three people in the room program. But that's not a necessity by any
means. Well, Ben sorta. I've seen
what are you talking about?
Ben teaches programming.
Ouch. Well, he teaches something.
Ew,
I don't know.
He doesn't work at Google, so he doesn't really program.
What did I ever do to you, Miles? Wow.
You know what I love? What I love about that is that he picked on you and not me, because it used to be me.
You used to be the one who didn't program?
No, the jibe would have been me. No, Ben programmed.
Wow.
Let's be very clear. Ben's programmed.
Yes.
See what you're doing? You're undermining. Yeah.
But you're not going to make me really learn to program, are you?
And I'm not going to make you do anything.
Oh, good.
Read this.
Okay.
So why do you feel, why are you disinterested?
Boy, you know, I guess I get an opt-out pass because I'm not a digital native. You know,
You were born before computers existed, and therefore,
not before they existed.
Before they were popular.
Before they were popular. And sure, when I was a kid, we managed to get our little fingers on the pet computer
keyboard.
Let's
be clear here that she is not substantially older than Lyle and myself.
I don't think she is, actually.
I'm fine.
By any means.
I'm 44.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, you are.
So I am the ancient person in the room. True? How old are you, Miles?
I will be 40 this year.
Okay.
As will I.
Well, children.
And Ben is 12.
I feel it is your duty as the younger people to program for us oldies. I fully believe
don't
that
program
you'll
if you're
come
over 40.
Later and show me how to program my smartphone.
Okay, so the idea I have is that you can, of course, live in a world where you do not understand basic tenets of things that are important. For example, like, we all have some general understanding of how the government works, we understand how law works, but at the same case, if we went in front of a judge to try to argue a case, we would lose, we would fail, because we're not experts in that space.
Yeah.
So I'm not talking about being expert, but there is an understanding that you know what the legal argument is, you know how the government structure works to some level.
Because you know what a contract is.
Yeah, you know what a contract is. Because it's important to live in the world to know those things.
Right. Like, for example, you don't have to be a Nobel Prize winning scientist to know that perpetual motion machines are bunk.
Right. Or that astrology is
bunk.
Right.
Yes.
All right.
So I like that we were able to wrap that back in. But it is important at some level to know what a legal contract is, right? Like, understand what the meaning of that is.
Now, you boys aren't implying that I don't know what a program is, are you?
No, I'm not saying that. But at the same time, the complexity of what an application is versus what programming is, those are very different things.
Yeah.
Or are they? They are, aren't they?
The thing is, it is teaching you how to think logically.
Yeah.
And one of the things I noticed a while back, and I was having a conversation with someone at the AT&T store when I was getting my folks some phones, because somehow it came up. No, the people there were very nice.
The people are nice, but let's all agree that AT&T is icky.
Yeah.
Okay.
Most corporations that are that big are.
The person behind the counter was asking about programming and how she could get into that or get into the computer industry if I had any recommendations for her, because she was still in college.
Okay.
And I was saying learn how to program. But I put in a qualifier, which was, and when you start, it's going to be horrible.
Yeah. Oh, that because is why I don't learn to program. And this is,
that's like saying learn math, but in the beginning, it's horrible.
It's well, not.
That's the thing, though. Why do you say that's, it's horrible?
The reason I say that is because I don't necessarily like the way that it's taught.
Yeah.
Programming in and of itself is exactly like, in general cases, in the vast majority of programming cases, mm-hmm. is like doing algebra word problems.
Yeah.
It's figuring out where your variables are and putting them in the right place so you can get the right output. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know of many people who look back on their algebra class and went...
Or look back in high school and goes, you know what was
word
fun.
Word problems were awesome. Right. I want to do those for a living.
Yeah.
And learning how to do them was a challenge. And I believe that the way that they are taught is not conducive to getting the vast majority of people engaged.
You're not still ribbing Ben, are you?
All right, let's do this. Since we have other news stories and other things to do on Geek Speak, why don't we do this? Bonnie, would you give me half an hour of your time this next week? I'll give you a URL, and you get to walk through something that is learning to program. It's at code.org. It's very simple. Uh-huh. You get to play with Angry Birds and zombies and stuff. It's fun.
If I can do it remotely, because I'll be spending most of my week out of town.
Oh, well, will you have a laptop with you?
Yes.
Yes, you'll be able to do that then. Okay. I will give you that, and then next week we'll find out if what I'm saying is completely ridiculous or not.
All right. And on that note, perhaps other people who are learning to program and are either experiencing what Miles is talking about, it being a big slog, or finding a way to make it fun for themselves, contact us at geeks@geekspeak.org, and we might be talking to some of you later on the air.
And a way to make it not a slog, a way to make it wonderful, which isn't the traditional path, is one that Ben and I have been involved in, which is teaching kids how to write video games in summertime for summer school.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That is a wonderful way of getting and the thing is, we get kids engaged, but really I think any age can jump into this.
I agree with that. Often kids are the ones with the most time, mm-hmm. and sometimes more imagination or eagerness, like especially with video game creation, mm-hmm. for example.
Mm-hmm. And it's easier for parents to go like, we're going to sign you up for this, but it's harder to sign yourself up for
and also their learnerators are more exercised, right? Because they're learning all the time.
Yeah.
I think actually as you get older, the types of games that you would make would be different. I don't know that the ability to learn how to program would actually be diminished that much.
Uh-huh. It's different.
Because I learned how to... I took trigonometry and calculus much later than most people did.
Okay.
I signed up for trigonometry when I was 27.
Yeah.
Which is much later than like the 16-year-olds that are taking it, for example.
Yeah.
And it was much easier for me than I think it would have been when I was younger. But I think that also had a lot to do with the fact that I had been programming in the interim.
Well, mm-hmm. that's on your learnerator around that was more exercised.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I would agree. I think it is more difficult for adults to learn things in general, certainly also programming. It's not by any means impossible, and it's not by any means a reason that you shouldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a little bit more difficult, you know. Like when I teach teenagers in the summer, they are just so fast, you know.
Yeah.
And oftentimes the adult classes are a bit slower. But the things that we cover in the adult classes are more relevant for people who are going to become programmers if they want to.
Yeah.
Versus with teens, it's a lot more coming up with examples that they can see immediate.
Yeah. Getting them excited so that the momentum keeps them going down that path so they could become programmers or just get familiar with that area. Even if you don't become a programmer, that area I still believe has great value.
All right. So if you are currently taking up programming, have some insight from a recent experience, write us at geeks@geekspeak.org. We want to hear about it. And Lyle, I will submit to your half hour for whatever it is you're going to do.
Woohoo! One more down!
One more down. Many billions to go. This is Geek Speak here on 889kusp.org. And in just a moment, we're going to hate on Comcast and talk about some other things. So do stay tuned. This is Geek Speak on 889KUSP. I'm Bonnie Jean Primsch in the host chair, being made to do things I might not have done otherwise. And with me in the air room, but not in the host chair itself, are Lyle Troxell, Miles Elam, and Ben Jaffe. Well, geeks, we got a call from Elizabeth in Aptos. She was considering our conversation earlier about astrology versus astronomy. And she heard you, Miles, when you said that astrology is bunk. She asks the question, if the moon and the tide affect our body fluids, then why not the planets? And that is a question with a big answer. So, Ben, how are you helping us out with that?
Well, I've posted a link. I'm going to say, in short, the inverse square law. That's why.
Okay.
And if you want more information about that, because we have other topics we want to cover before the end of the show, we are posting a link on the website. It'll be up in about 45 seconds, and you can go to geekspeak.org, take a look at our current show page, and click on that.
So, Elizabeth, thank you for the question. I'm sure it's one that other people have had and have, and so there will be an answer for all of you, all of us, at geekspeak.org, and thanks for the call.
I've definitely been asked that question a lot of times before.
Have you? Yeah. Yeah, so I think it's a good one to take up. And we wanted to cover the big, big sort of tech news in the corporate world this week, which is that Comcast bought Time Warner Cable for how much, Ben?
$44.2 billion. And that's really, I mean, that speaks for itself. There's not much to this story other than Comcast is going to buy Time Warner, assuming there isn't something that gets in the way, antitrust this or that or whatever, then it'll happen. And that's terrifying. That's horrible because we already
have, there's a monopoly problem.
Have a lack of competition in cable and internet, and this is only going to make things worse.
The argument that's being made is that it's not going to affect monopoly because
it's already a monopoly.
Well, it is. in a particular area, there's only one cable company.
Right.
They have that. You know, they have that slot.
Yeah, I heard
theirs.
NPR making, or someone on NPR making that argument, and I was shocked that this was how it was being reported, because it seemed like really an understatement of what was going on.
And it's like, yes, we have this slot, and the other person has that slot in the other county. So if we took over them and we had both slots, nothing would change. It would still, that's the thing, though.
Well,
it wouldn't
like
change. It would still be a monopolistic,
yeah.
It would still be monopolistic nonsense.
So, Miles, you have an opinion about this, about what Comcast is doing.
Indeed I do. I think I just stated it.
But do you think they've actually bought off the FCC, really?
Let me give a quote to feed your fuel, Miles. Okay. The companies claimed in their materials that the deal is pro-consumer, pro-competitive, and will generate substantial public interest benefits. That's their stance.
What is this, doublespeak? It's 1984 all over
again. That's what they said.
Was that on Twitter? Because otherwise I would want sources.
No, this is CBS News.
Okay, yeah. I want sources.
So, so Miles, why do you think that it's not pro-consumer?
Right now, if you want high-speed internet, you either move to an area that has fiber optics for a reasonable price. Mm-hmm. You know, you move to where there's Google Fiber, Verizon Fios, or something like that. Or you get cable, which is the vast majority of people. Like, because DSL just doesn't it doesn't come close to the highest speeds that cable can get. Satellite has too high latencies for most people's applications. Like if you're trying to do video conferencing over a satellite link, it gets really wonky. And so it actually is becoming more and more common to be the internet provider for broadband. And to say that, yes, to reduce the number of players in that space, even though they are, you know, partitioned by geography artificially in some ways, just kind of ignores some of the underlying problems.
Yeah.
It's going in the opposite direction. Like saying like it's – I could see the argument for – yes, we're in completely different geographic regions. We don't compete anyway, so it's not going to hurt competition.
Yeah.
I can actually see that, except for the fact of it completely ignores the why isn't there competition in a particular geographic region.
Right, right. Well, and there's also the problem with the power that a company can wield when unchecked, basically, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing about net neutrality being over is that companies can decide which streams they want to slow or not. And that's already happening, right?
Right. Currently, people have been finding that on Verizon's networks as well as Comcast, that Netflix has been getting slow. And I have actually noticed this in my own home. Like Netflix has been skipping more often and been harder to connect to.
Mm-hmm. What carrier do you have?
Comcast.
And do you have a choice in getting another connection at your house? Could you get a different high-speed service provider? You get DSL, right?
At the speeds that I have, no.
You couldn't get anything like that.
There is no alternative at the speed that I have.
Yeah.
I wish there was. That's the biggest problem for me, is that there's this idea that there is competition in high-speed data. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, if you look around, there isn't really. Like, you can't, in our area at least, you can't really get high-speed access.
Yeah, we get into some pretty rural pockets.
Yeah, if you're in a city, lots of times there are other options. But if you're out in, you know, where we are.
But there aren't. If you're talking about the cable provider, there everywhere you go, there's one cable provider.
It's true.
In your region.
I mean, that's how it actually worked. You know, when the U.S. government subsidized cable installations to these cable, these telcos, or at the time they weren't telcos, they were cable companies, basically they bought regions, and that's how they did it. So you'd have one company own one region, and then, of course, Comcast has consumed other cable providers over the years. So it just gets bigger and bigger. And it's very much like the telco companies in the way that they have a dominance on landline, on wire going to houses, and only one wire goes to that house. Only one phone company goes to your house, and only one cable company goes to your house.
Yeah, it used to be Ma Bell, and then Ma Bell got broken up in the early 80s, and suddenly it's Ma Bell under a different name.
So the thing I don't understand about it is, why isn't it clear that this is monopoly and monopoly growth? I mean, I don't get how that argument...
How is the doublespeak allowed to stand?
That's the thing that's so frustrating to me. Exactly.
The areas that do have competition are places like Kansas City or Austin or some places in Southern California that have Verizon fiber optic available to them, where you do have, fiber optic. You have this high-speed, or SonicNet, in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. Like, you have these high-speed connections in parallel with cable. And, in fact, those places where fiber optic shows up, the cable and DSL and other competition, their prices drop dramatically.
Yeah.
Boy, do we have some articles or something that we can link to on our website to illustrate some of the stuff we're talking about right now?
Yeah, we'll add some stuff to Geekspeak.
And you can also look at Geekspeak's archives. Like, we've
talked about this a bit.
We can point to some good shows.
I think the reason why this kind of stuff emerges and is so frustrating for us geeks is that because it's an extremely technical topic, in the sense that it's hard to talk about data transfer. Like, when politicians talk about, how the net works, they talk about giant pipes, right?
Tubes.
There's these jokes.
They
and there's a bit of a, well, I don't understand that stuff, so I'll trust the experts aspect of technology that, when you're coming from the geek perspective, when you know how to program and you've taken that on, for example, you can dissect it at a deeper level, but understand it better, and then get frustrated with stupid decisions being made by people that don't understand it.
We're taking it from the point of view of tech, as opposed to taking it from the point of view of someone might say, by business.
Right.
That's true.
But you're making a point that with programming and understanding how the technical stuff works becomes being less at the mercy of big corporations that wield it against us. It sounds like Melinda in Soquel is taking steps to take care of herself that way. She's on the line right now. You're getting schooled up, Melinda. Is that the case? Melinda, are you still there?
I am.
So you're going back to school?
Well, no. Actually, my comment was that I did go back to school when I was 46. I'm 64 now.
Oh, okay.
And I'm excited because the way you describe learning code was exactly my experience when I decided to go back to school and I took algebra. Uh-huh. It was a slog because the teacher I had was boring, but then I took algebra so I could move on to chemistry. It was a requirement.
Oh, I see.
And my chemistry teacher had a way of using the algebra. We needed it for chemistry, and we needed the equation for chemical reactions. But his way of using the equations was beautiful, like music.
Mm.
And so I began to see the beauty of the equations and to admire the minds who had come up with them in the first place. And it all started coming together, for me, just math in general.
Yeah.
And
So you're making a point, Melinda, that it is possible to take subjects that would be sort of an unbearable slog and in the hands of a good educator can be approachable.
And in the hands of a bad educator makes it
approachable, but
worse.
Delightful. Yeah, yeah. And moved on to microbiology, anatomy, and physiology, and all of it was just such a joy.
Oh, nice.
Yes. And so when you said that about programming, now I'm so excited. Because I started using Duolingo?
Duolingo.
Oh, yes, and that's so much fun.
Yeah.
For language.
Why was it not that feeling when you were in first in high school and first addressed to chemistry?
Oh, when I was in high school, I went to because I was too smart for my classes. Mm. I know that sounds really arrogant, and I'm embarrassed.
No, we all know what you mean, Melinda.
I couldn't sit still.
Yeah.
And I was, I can't believe I said that on the radio.
Now we all know.
I'm really embarrassed to say that, but I found one class I liked. It was geometry, and I got an A in it. And basically, the rest of it was looking out the window, and I would make a line on the paper for each minute that passed in the class, and draw. But I was just not engaged, and I went to a private school, and they graduated anybody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because your parents paid money, right. And so that was in Santa Clara Valley.
So it kind of supports that it's the way we're teaching it that's not engaging. Because then you go back to it, and you have an amazing teacher that shows the beauty of it to you.
Oh, my gosh, this teacher was amazing. Yeah, the chemistry teacher, that was my first inkling that, who were these people that made these equations?
Yeah.
That's when I started... that's when it started occurring to me that the beauty that was in the behind everything.
I wonder if you had the same thought that I did, which was that it wasn't that the teacher was trying to entertain, but rather that they were putting it forth in such a way that the subject itself became entertaining.
He wasn't doing anything but sharing his love.
Yeah.
So how about this? Melinda, thank you so much for those comments. It's inspired me to maybe ask for a call out to people who remember especially good educators.
Yeah.
Things that really helped a difficult subject land for them. Write us at geek@geekspeak.org, geeks@geekspeak.org. We'd love to do a shout out on the air for some good educators out there.
I would love to learn programming at 64 now.
Yeah.
All right. You should
and
do
another thing about Comcast. Yes, my Netflix has been flickering, and I am highly suspicious that they're, because I am using Netflix a lot more now than I'm watching Comcast, and I know they're feeling threatened, and I'm very, very suspicious that they're trying to interfere with my Netflix.
Thank you for the call, Melinda. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
All right. Well, good topics today. Hey, do we have time for something about giant lasers?
Oh, my God. Yeah, I've got one.
Oh, good. You've got a giant laser story?
Oh, but I have a story. Okay, a little bit.
So the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, basically they said that for the first time they've produced significant amounts of fusion by zapping a target with their laser, which is kind of amazing. This is basically the first time we've done this. We have hydrogen bombs. Those are completely uncontrolled. Fusion. We've got the sun, which we have no control over or any interface control. But so this $3 billion facility, here are just a couple of quick stats. It's 192 beams, takes up the length of 3 football fields. And for a very, very brief moment, like a very small fraction of a second, the beams focus 500 trillion watts of power, which is more power than is used by the United States. All of the United States. So for that brief instant, focuses 500 trillion watts of power onto a target about the width of a number 2 pencil.
What?
That's an unhappy pencil.
That's right. An unhappy pencil.
Really unhappy.
Or a pencil that feels momentarily very powerful.
Yeah, so it's just a bit of... So it's just a bit of hydrogen fuel, and they just put all of this energy into it. Unfortunately, one of the reasons that that they can't get... So they got more out of the fuel than... was in the energy that hit the fuel, if that makes sense. But because of inefficiencies in the way the laser is set up and everything, only 1% of the 500 trillion watts that they threw at it actually hit the fuel. So if they were to get that up to 100% efficiency, which is not necessarily in their roadmap, then conceivably they could actually make this really work. But it's kind of cool to see this research, slowly make its way through and maybe get us to a point where we could consider using hydrogen consider using nuclear fusion as a form of energy or something.
So good. We'll have a thing about that at geekspeak.org. Yes.
Yeah. It's already up.
It's already up, so you can check it out there. Also to be seen at geekspeak.org, various NSA pickup lines. I'm not sure we're going to have time to get to all of them, but
those
Miles,
funny.
Can we just do a couple of them?
It's hard to do.
NSA pickup lines?
Sure.
You know what I really love was, what did I really like? How about number 8? How's that one go?
Someone want to get some like background music?
Yeah.
We understand you so much better than the guy you're with now.
Oh, yeah. How about, let's see, number four.
NSA pickup lines, everybody.
Yes. Yeah. I know exactly where you've been all my life.
And NSA pickup line number two?
We had you at hello.
So you'll be able to see all 10 up at geekspeak.org. And Ben, one last correction. How do you pronounce N-G-U-Y-E-N?
Nguyen.
How's it go?
Nguyen.
Okay, we were all wrong. That's how you really
it's
say
like
it.
It's one of the most popular Vietnamese last names. And we all got it wrong.
We all got it wrong. That shows you what we know.
Wah, wah.
We're willing to learn. Hey, Warren and Salinas, we'd love to hear what you have to say about learning to program. But as you know, there's no time. So write us at geeks@geekspeak.org, and we'll talk about it next week. You have been listening to Geek Speak here on 88.9 KUSP. What else do I want to say about that?
Geek Speak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and used with permission.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say. And Geek Speak is Creative Commons Attribution 3.0, so reuse our stuff any way you like, but please just tell them the geeks say hi. This is Public Radio for the Central Coast, 88.9 KUSP Santa Cruz, live online at KUSP.org. To find out more about this or any episode of Geek Speak, please visit geekspeak.org. And thanks, by the way, for listening.
Yeah.